From emerging and advancing photonics technologies to roundtable discussions with industry experts and talks with scientists and students entrenched in the furrows of photonics and optics research and everything in between. Join us for Following the Photons, a photonics podcast, hosted by Justine Murphy, multimedia director with Endeavor Business Media's Design and Engineering Group. We'll take you on a deep dive into the realm of one of the most exciting and fastest advancing industries in the world. Hello there. Thank you all so much for tuning into this latest episode of Following the Photons. I'm Justine Murphy with Laser Focus World. I'm talking today with Giselle Bennett, who was recently elected the 2024 Vice President of Optica. She's a major player in the photonics and optics industry who has spent over three decades in academia, industry, and research positions. And she's one of the founders of MEPSS LLC, a startup software company where she is also a managing member. So what is it that got you interested in STEM? How did you get this start?
I got into STEM because I kind of like to know how things work. And I grew up in Central Florida, kind of at the height of this space shuttle program. And so that was a little bit of an inspiration in terms of we're launching shuttles. We are doing experiments in space. We're getting into communications. And here's this area of optics that is so broad and spans so many different disciplines that it was just fascinating to me. And just basic STEM, just the curiosity of how things work.
In what specific discipline did you start?
Well, it was very general initially, very signal processing oriented. And at my undergraduate, I was at the University of Central Florida for my undergraduate degree. So, of course, rocket launches, you can see them. Plus the explosions from the Challenger, unfortunately, which was a very sad day.
Yeah, I remember watching that on TV in school. I can't imagine being there.
Yeah, it was you can't unsee that. And I was walking between classes and saw the trail in the sky, went to the library, and then realized what happened on TV. So it was very memorable. The University of Central Florida actually just started an optics program where they allocated funds to recruit optics faculty in a wide range of disciplines because optics is so broad. It is it spans so many areas and it affects our everyday life. And so I was one of the early graduates with a master's degree before I went on to Georgia Tech to work in the area of optical signal processing in particular. But that just opened up the aperture for transitioning into a field that was really starting to be known as a discipline that spanned physics, electrical engineering, chemistry, mathematics. So it was a nice area to get into.
In your current work, what are some differences in how you started and how things are going right now? What is your perspective on that? I'm always interested in that. Someone who's, you know, in the trenches. What do you think?
People know more about optics. It's included in your entrance exams as one of the options for PhD programs now. There are a number of schools that offer a specific degree in optics, whereas before you got a degree in electrical engineering, physics, one of the other STEM degrees with a specialty in whatever optical area that you decided to pick. And so now there is that emphasis, there is that recognition of the importance in not only everyday life of things we use. Think about LED bulbs and think about displays. Think about autonomous vehicles. Optics is everywhere. Imaging systems, whether it's biomedical or imaging through the atmosphere, we just see it everywhere.
What are you working on right now?
So right now, I'm actually spending a lot more time on automation of systems. So very, very much programming and a startup, which is fun. I spent 30 years in academia and then just a couple of years ago, focused on a startup, working with folks I used to work with before at Georgia Tech, and we're just having a ball. So maybe a little bit of optics, a lot of programming, a lot of startup type activities, but supporting some platforms that have some optical components to them, but from the driving the software on the back end.
When you were in academia, what specifically did you teach?
Fourier optics and signal processing. Think about the things that you would do computationally, you know, with a computer chip. You know, I want to take an image and I want to look at edges, or I want to take an image and merge it with something else, or I want to improve the resolution on an image. You know, just taking what you might have done computationally, but optically. And the irony is, some of the areas, you know, it's the fundamentals for optics, or at least that's my bias, but a lot of the things I was teaching at the time came in super handy for some of the projects I was working on. You know, like a lens design that will allow you to detect motion in one direction, but not the other, because you might, we were working on a project to detect door openings in containers. And so we designed a system where the lens was very specific to only detect movement in one direction, so you didn't detect movement from the sloshing around of the container and get a false opening when it wasn't open. It was just torqued. So it was fun in terms of linking the theoretical in the classroom to active projects that needed a solution.
What made you make that switch from academia to a startup, or to, you know, a different realm of this industry? What brought you there?
Actually, COVID was an interesting time period. So yeah, I spent so much time in research and academia and in administration. I was a VP for research and wanted to get back into having more flexibility, and also always wanted to have a company, and the team I work with they're outstanding. We've been working together for a long time, and everybody was ready to make that transition. So COVID actually was that final jump, which has been fun.
Oh, nice. That's good. Something good came out of this for you. That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, so could you tell me a little bit more about the MEPSS?
The company actually was derived from software we built in early 2000, and it was for maintainers. It was a decision support system. And it was, you know, how do you improve decision making for people working on aircraft? And we were very focused on defense platforms and trying to reduce the cost and reduce the time to repair to turn an aircraft around. So the acronym kind of came out from that era, but from that architecture we developed also bled over into decision support for emergency responders. So we have a software package that's used globally by emergency responders for dealing with any number of situations. So think about having a chemical spill and needing to know what to do with that and how to mitigate that. Battery fires right now with lithium-ion batteries and electric vehicles is a huge problem. And then there's a number of, I think we're at 32, 33 tool sets in this decision support that's used globally. But the core concept is in the sense of just being able to provide decision support, automation, efficiencies for completely a lot of different applications.
What are your hopes for the future? What are some of your goals as you move forward with this company?
At the moment, we're having fun. We're making a difference. I can say we're saving lives because of some of the work we're doing, and that's good for our country.
Fantastic. So you are recently elected. Is that an elected position with Optica? Is that how that works?
It is an elected position. A vote goes out to the membership, and then you get elected.
Right. So how did you, well, you said you started on the board of directors. How did you get involved there? And why was that important for you?
Well, actually, it goes back even further because Optica is very dear to my heart because it was my professional society as a graduate student. I was very fortunate. I mean, this goes back. We're talking a long time ago. But it goes back to having very good advisors who really emphasize the importance of being involved with these professional societies. Optica was the first one I was involved with. My very first talk in front of a large audience was it through Optica. And so I've always been a big supporter of what they've done, their mission, their reach out, and watch their growth over the years. So I got involved as a topical editor for Applied Optics, and then I got involved in chairing conferences. So I've been involved at very different levels. And my goal, when the time permitted, was to run for the president's role that ultimately becomes the president, so the vice president, which then transitions on. And so that was my goal. I couldn't do it with my workload before, and it wouldn't have been right. And so the timing was just, it was good.
So what does this entail? What does this mean for you?
Well, it's at this stage as vice president, you support governance. You support the operations for Optica. Optica is run by staff, but volunteers are on the board and will drive decisions and help with the growth and support of its membership.
Okay. And then as you move up into the role of president, what further does that entail?
Well, as you move into the role of president, you set the direction for initiatives that you might want. And so one of the things I'm very passionate about is mentorship and getting other people in STEM. We really have a gap globally. And if we can make a difference and reaching out at younger ages, then we've done something really good, not only for our current membership, which are established professionals, but also for succession of the new generation. And the thing about it is, over the years, decades, things have changed. The generation doesn't think they need to belong to professional societies, but they're missing a significant element of the connections, the collaborations. Just because you can look something up online it's not as rich as meeting with a colleague, brainstorming. And so I'm hoping we can evolve and help folks be reminded of that is still valuable.
Right. How do you think we can do that? Attract new people? Because I know that is a big problem throughout the industry.
It is a big problem. It is across all professional societies. I think it starts earlier, you know, early stages that set an impression. I really think it starts when they're even in high school to get them in STEM fields, then in college to help promote them. We have, so Optica and the other professional societies as well, have a lot of programs to help people with scholarships. Let's say there's programs to help people that want to start their own company. So we have a lot of members who are CEOs of their companies, very successful, and they come in and give lectures about, hey, here's the things to look out for. Here's what, you know, answer questions. And that's offered by the organization. That's huge. So I think there's a number of things we can do that also goes back to even K through 12. It makes a difference. I used to give demos in high schools for kids on optics demos in the state of Georgia when I lived up there. And the look on their face when you can explain something in a fun way and that, hey, you can actually make a career out of this. And the only gap is we never track down how many of those students we gave demos to, over 40,000, because my colleagues ended up taking this and I funded it internally with my funds that I had to have them go to the schools to give demos because I thought it was important and it was a means of giving back. And we just never traced how many went on to STEM careers as a result of that.
Well, that would be difficult to do, I would think, especially going to as many, talking to as many kids as you have.
My colleagues were amazing because they put together museum quality demos that were very impressive, optics demos, and they demonstrated the laser and so many different demos that they put together just to get the interest and the wow factor for the kids to play around. It just grew, and they ran with it. It was great.
Where do you see the industry going at this point? I mean, obviously the technology is constantly advancing and changing and growing. Minus, you know, trying to get people into the industry, where do you see things going from here?
Wow, that's difficult. There's a number of, I think, pathways. Quantum, of course, is getting a lot of attention, and it has over the years. So this is nothing new, but now there is a big push for a quantum initiative. There's been advances in device materials. So I was a theoretician. I was modeling atmospheric turbulence and imaging. And a lot of things I modeled, the devices were not available at that time, but they are now, to be able to actually build what theoretically made sense. And so I think the advancements in manufacturing, the advancements in the computational abilities, so think about the rendering of LiDAR for the autonomous vehicles. I mean, there's a massive amount of computational requirements there. And so I think we're progressing. The problem is the workforce, and it's different levels of the workforce that we desperately need. So you need the technician level, and you need the designer level and the engineering level, and they're different skill sets, and they're both very important. So I think if we can marry up the skills that are needed, we will continue to advance the industry for a number of applications. There's no one particular. I think biomedical imaging is one that's just grown and very impressive.
Right. When I went to BIOS, actually, it's funny that you say that, because when I went to BIOS, I spent all of Saturday just going to different sessions that seemed interesting, but at least one talk in every tract had something to do with quantum in bio. Every single one. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah, it's the hot topic. And I think there's just been enough movement and critical mass to get people working in this to enable it, whereas before it was really sort of theoretical and just early stages. Now you can actually implement and build things.
Right. It's getting somewhere, finally. So if you had a meeting with your younger self.
Scary.
What are some things that you would say to her?
Ooh, wow. That is a tough question. I think I would say, stay the course. Do what you've done. I was very fortunate. I had great advisors and mentors. And so I'm a big believer in mentors, no matter what stage you are in your career, because of that. And my mentors, I'll tell you, one told me at my very first conference, it's not just sitting through the talks, it's talking to your colleagues in the hallway. That was the best advice, because as a young researcher, I thought I had to go sit through every single talk. No, that was crazy. And then I had, I had an advisor who was an editor in chief, of which that role I hold now for Applied Optics, who just bled all over papers, but that forced you to think about what you were writing.
Right.
it's funny. I don't think I would do much differently. Every decision path I would tell people has a trade-off, and you have to decide what's worth it for your trade-off. Everything comes with a cost.
Absolutely. Well, that's so great to be able to feel that way, to say that you wouldn't change things, because right, everything does lead to where you are. That's yeah. Wonderful. So if you, because I'm sure you've, like you said, you've mentored, what do you hope that they have gotten from that?
I hope the folks I've mentored have gotten some insight, whether it's to step back and be objective and realize that what they're looking at is really in the noise and the big picture of things, versus, and also to understand that you make your own choices, you pick your paths, and just sort of stay the course. I still mentor some of my colleagues, you know, as a sounding board.
Oh, nice.
And it's a win-win.
Right, absolutely. And your role with Optica should help with that, further that. So that's great too.
Yeah, I'm hoping that will be one of my initiatives when I'm president, is to really push that even more than what's already going on. There's a lot of programs there, but I think we can do even more to help reach out.
Right. Okay, well, thank you so much, Giselle, for talking with me. This has been so great. Very illuminating, so to speak. No pun intended.
Yes. Well, great.
That does it for this edition of Following the Photons, a photonics podcast. I'd like to thank our guests for joining me today and sharing their interesting perspectives and expertise. And thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast feed to keep up with what's happening around the industry and to listen to new and archived episodes. And follow us on social media too. Until next time, keep following the photons.